I understand there's a lot of people here tonight who are into computers. So here's a special joke for you, okay? Those people who don't know anything about computers, don't worry, because you'll still be able to enjoy this joke, okay? It's in ZX80 machine code, right? And all the numbers are hexadecimal. Here we go. Well, there's this guy who loads the DE register pair with the start address of the sound chip. Okay. So, anyway, he makes a jump relative non-zero loop. Idiot. Increments the accumulator register and pops the contents of DE onto the stack, so the next day his friend comes in and sees the HL is loaded with the pointer address in RAM where the start of the variable list is stored. He says, "Hey, no wonder you thought the alternative register set had its fourth bit always set to zero. You're programming a 6502 chip!" I don't believe it, you can't have all heard it, can you?
Son of Cliché, written by Rob Grant and Doug Naylor, starring Christopher Barry, Nick Maloney, Nick Wilson. Music by Peter Brewis.
Hi. Tonight on Profile, we look back on the career of silent movie maker Skinny Aykroyd. Born in England in 1897, Skinny's early life was harsh. His father was an Italian immigrant. His mother was Chinese. Most of his youth was spent trying to eat minestrone soup with chopsticks. This is Monica Skinny. Money was always scarce. When Skinny joined primary school, his parents couldn't afford the school uniform, so they painted one on him. Skinny suffered at school from dyslexia, a disorder which was never fully understood until Susan Hampshire appeared in the Forsyte saga. An outcast because of his disorder, Skinny was constantly beaten and bullied by school friends and thrashed by the teachers. As a defense mechanism, Skinny learned how to be funny. Consequently, fellow pupils would laugh helplessly as this funny little boy was kicked around incessantly about the schoolyard. Shunned, he worked his passage to America, the land of hope, the land of equal opportunity. But they wouldn't let him in because they thought he looked like a wop. Still, somehow, Skinny found his way to Hollywood and was soon making silent movies under Max Sennett. Gary Schleppenhauser, film historian and Skinny's biographer, recalls that period.
Skinny Aykroyd, firmly believed in the auteur theory like Charlie Chaplin. The problem was that unlike Harry Langdon, or Stan and Ollie, Stan, Laurel, and Oliver Hardy, Skinny Aykroyd, could not understand the written word. Yet he insisted on writing his own script. It baffled audiences all the time. You'd have a scene where a dog was barking, and the word came up and said, "Pinto, Pinto." So Max sacked him. Max Sennett.
Sacked by Sennett for making three flops in a row, Yup Up Rilik Bongle, Croto Canag, and finally A Midsummer's Night Nargish, which he co-wrote with Chapin, he disappeared into obscurity until a chance meeting with our old friend, Mosey Gill.
Yeah. I met Skinny in 54, and I said, "Skinny, Skin Dad, let's re-release all your flicks, right? And tell all the cats, like, that you're some heavy dude Swedish film director and all that, you know?" And he bought it. He wrote me a thank you note. At least I think it was a thank you note. And a cheque for Nergic £1 million. But I never cashed it.
Skinny had arrived, and all because he pretended his dyslexic silent movies were heavy Swedish art movies. Skinny Aykroyd, or, as he signs himself, Ingmar Bergman. Ta-da.
Now, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. My next guest is a man, is he not, who is one of those people who make us all realise how lucky we are. Because, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, for the last 3 years, Malcolm Bunbury has had his head stuck in a pair of Sony Walkman earphones. And by a tragic fluke, he can't even turn it off. And worse still, it's permanently tuned to Radio Wad. Malcolm Bunbury, welcome. Malcolm, welcome.
What? Oh, thank you, Russell.
Tell us, will you not, for the benefit of the people at home, how on earth do you cope?
Uptown girl. Uptown girl.
Malcolm, how do you cope?
Coping, the biggest problem, Russell, is concentration.
And when she's walking, she's walking, so bye-yay-yay-yay. Down go!
And I understand, Malcolm, that you've met a fellow sufferer, and now you tour the club singing duets together, do you not?
Well, Russell, I've met a fellow sufferer, and now we sing duets together.
And you're going to sing one for us tonight.
And we'd like to sing one for you right now.
Well, then, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Walkman Brothers.
The final curtain. Friends, the same clue. I'm certain. Okay, Bob, nice to see you. I can give you 2.5 minutes before I've got a meeting with Paramount and some studio heads.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Guggenheim. I've just spoken to the publicity people on the Newman movie, and everything's okay. I was just wondering, I may have to take some time off because my wife is expecting. I want to be there so that I can video the birth.
Video the birth?
Mm-hmm.
Who's working on that with you, Bob?
No one. I'm just doing it myself.
Who's playing the part of your wife?
My wife.
Do you think that's wise, Bob?
Wise?
Do you think people are going to pay money to come and see Mrs. Bob Cook deliver a child?
Oh, it's not that kind of film.
Hey, have you thought of Streep?
Meryl Streep?
She'd be perfect. She's had children before. 2 in Sophie's Choice, 1 in Silkwood. She's perfect. Hey, I'm getting excited now. Hey, we'll get Streep. Who's playing the part of the doctor?
The doctor?
We'll get Hackman. Better still, we'll have 2 doctors and get Pacino and Hackman.
I don't think you understand, Mr. Guggenheim. This is just a $50 video of the birth of my first child.
The child? Who's going to play the child?
My child will play the child, Mr. Guggenheim. That's who will play the child.
Hoffman.
That's in Hoffman?
Why not? He's played a 100-year-old man. He played a woman in Tootsie. Dustin loves a challenge.
Look, it's a $50 video of an important occasion in my life.
You? Who's going to play you?
Me. I'm going to play me.
Redford. Robert Redford. Hey, wait. Lou Streep. Get Streisand. The way we were all over again. Who's doing the music?
There's no music.
No music? In a Streisand movie? Are you insane? John Williams. God, this is beautiful.
Well, what are you talking about? It's my baby.
No, it isn't. It's Dustin Hoffman. I can see the opening. Streisand straddled on the table. Rob Redford mopping her brow. Creep in the title song. Streisand sings, push, push. Push our little child into the world. Will it be a boy or will it be a girl? Just at that moment, Hoffman's head appears. What an entrance! Hey, Carl Malden can play the afterbirth.
Welcome to the International Bridge Tournament between Great Britain and Australia. You join us in the third rubber. The rubber's tied at 1 each. Australia trailing by 1,000 points. And Great Britain, north-south, are vulnerable. And it's north to bid.
Well, this is an unkind deal. I'm not quite sure why. No spades, no hearts, no diamonds, no clubs. What I do have, however, is Mr. Bun the Baker. The Butcher family, Master Green the Grocer, and Mrs. Cobbler. I think I'll show me butchers. 1 butcher.
Pass.
The Australian's passing, and it's south to bid.
What is going on? Obviously, he has the same kind of cards as I do. Now, this is what happens, you see, when you play bridge with bloody Aussies. Let's see, 1 butcher. I've got to show him my bun family somehow. I can't get stuck in butchers. I've only got one in Master Chops. And after all, we are playing the Blackwood Convention. I want to show him my grocers. 2 bakers.
I can't understand why my partner keeps saying pass. I've got to find out what he wants me to pass him. Pass what?
Pass the smoke.
I knew it. He does want me smokes. Well, he's not having them. Up yours, dingo face.
The bidding ended on 6 bakers. North squeezed the plants thanks to a poor defensive lead and the fact that the Australians were fighting over a packet of cigarettes. North went 1 over and collected a 2-1 rubber lead to take them into the last rubber, to be played in Adelaide in about 6 minutes' time.
Spanish television.
presents...
A-S-S-O!
S-O! Spanish Detective!
I was sitting in my office on East 23rd Hacienda Street, Taramelinos. Taramelinos is a dirty city full of dirty people. Dirty men and dirty nurses from Stockport. I'm a private deke in a small holiday village. Club 1830, compulsory sex holidays. My friends call me Asso. So do my enemies. Only that instant, the door opened.
Are you Asso?
That's what it says on the door, sweetheart.
Now then, I've got a problem. And I think you can help me. My name's Dave. The thing is, Asso, we were at a beach party, right? Like, on the beach.
See?
Me and my mate Brian.
I see.
We just finished singing the Birdie song for the 11th time. And we were playing that great game. Pass the tennis ball under your chin as an excuse to jiggle ladies' bosoms. When I noticed me mate, Brian, were missing. Asso, I want you to find him for me.
A missing drunk Englishman in Taramelinos. This case sounded a little unusual. I went down to my car, jumped in and roared off. Then I opened the window and started the engine. I turned on the radio. They were playing the Birdie song. I hadn't heard it for 20 minutes, so I sent in a listener request. So, Ryan was missing. I knew my first port of call. Taramelinos Morgue.
Asso, how goes it, brother?
Hey, sunshine, my man.
Hey, Asso, have you heard the Birdie song?
Sure I did.
I just heard it for the first time. That's some great song.
Hey, listen, Sanchez, I'm looking for a drunken Englishman. He's missing. His name is Brian from Colliehurst.
He's dead. Heart attack.
So, another case was over for Asso. I felt stupid. Only on Spanish TV would they have a plot so badly planned. I jumped into my car and screeched up. The nodding dog in the back got out and refused to get back in. All the facts of the case whirled around in my head. Brian was missing. Brian was dead. So that's why Brian was missing. Because he was dead. No way could I make this sound complicated. I turned on the news. They were playing the Birdie song.
At the third stroke, it will be 6, 31, and 20 seconds. At the third stroke, it will be 6, 30... Well, and 30 seconds. At the third stroke,
it will be 6, 30,
and 40 seconds.
Oh, sorry, hold it, Chris.
What?
Hold it.
Sorry, I'm just getting a bit tired.
Yeah, we are taping. Okay, we'll take it from, what? 6, 31, and 20. You got it? Okay, tape running, and...
At the third stroke, it will be... 31 and 30 seconds.
Sorry, stop the tape.
I'm sorry. I've been doing this all day. I'm shattered.
We were supposed to be finished by midnight. We're only halfway through.
At the... What's the line?
Third stroke!
Sorry, look. God, I'm just so tired!
We're all tired. In your own time.
At the third stroke, it will be 6, 31, and 20 seconds.
Hold it! Chris, you're slipping into Kenneth Williams again.
I can't help it. I'm absolutely exhausted.
Okay, hang on. All right, we'll take 20. Back at... Anyone got the time?
Welcome to another edition of Thinking Dirty. Where you, the listeners, try to think pure, clean thoughts, and it's our job to make you think dirty. Here we go. A boy and a girl, a are walking through a forest. Between them, they're carrying a bag of peas. They're not his peas, they're...
Dear Radio Times, I wish to protest most strongly about the listening audience to the radio program Son of Cliché. Why on earth do they have to resort to cheap, purine innuendo? For heaven's sake, what happened to the great radio audiences who listen to shows like Round the Horn and The Goon Show? They never had to think dirty for a laugh. Yours sincerely, an outraged radio show.
Coming soon to your cinema, a new regime of terror. Something so foul and sick you'll never feel safe again. Attack of the Killer Italian Wife Rats. It started in a textile research foundation.
John, I won't allow it, John.
We've put too much money in this project to call it off now.
John, I know we wanted to develop an elastic that gave the most support and the snuggest fit.
So it shrinks a little?
John, it shrinks to the size of a postage stamp on contact with human body heat.
Jeff, I released 100,000 pairs onto the market yesterday.
Oh, my God, John, those underpants are killing machines.
Let me through, damn it. Look, Donald, the body. Oh, my God. What'd he die of, Frank?
His pelvic girdle was crushed, stomach imploded, and his rectum was forced up into his lower intestines. And here's a strange thing. He wasn't wearing any underpants.
Yeah. What's that mean in layman's terms?
He had no browns on.
No, I mean all that medical stuff before that.
Lieutenant, we're dealing with someone or something which can force a man's buttocks together with such force they change sides.
Hi, Mike. How was the gym class?
Great. I feel real good about myself. Ah, I really do.
You want a massage?
No, I feel fine. These new underpants give me a heck of a lot of support, man. They really
do. What's wrong, Mike?
Oh, my God.
What is it?
Get my underpants off.
What? Get them off?
God, help me get them off. They're shrinking.
Yeah, I'm trying. They're shrinking all the time. They're too tight. Oh, my God. Okay, so we're dealing with killer underpants. Okay, so what?
So what? Who the hell is this guy?
Hey, calm down, Steve.
I'll tell you who the hell I am. I'm the lieutenant in charge of this investigation. Now you tell me, who the hell are you?
Who the hell am I? Yeah. I'm the only one around this goddamn place who knows anything about underpants. And I'm gonna save your stupid neck. That's who the hell I am.
So how come you know so much about goddamn underpants?
Because, El Schmucko, I studied underwear at Berkeley for 3 years. I majored in panties and girdles. And I did my doctorate in Y-fronts and boxers and specialized in thermals. And I'll tell you something, Lieutenant. What we're dealing with here is a perfect piece of lingerie. It doesn't think, it doesn't feel. All it does is hold testicles. And right now, this particular brand is holding them too goddamn tight.
Lieutenant, we've got to go public on this.
No can do, boys. Tomorrow is Labor Day. The mayor's coming. He's going to be traveling through the town on a big goddamn float. How's it going to look? Everywhere he turns, men are ripping down their underpants and trying to kick him out.
Don't miss Attack of the Killer Italian Wife Rats. You'll never get dressed again.
And welcome back to Adelaide for the second leg of the bridge final, slightly earlier than expected. The Australians, east-west, have dealt using new cards following a protest by the British. And it's east to bid.
Pass.
2 Stanley Matthews.
2 Net Lofthouse.
He's obviously very strong on football cards. My strength is really American Civil War and Outer Limits bubblegum cards. The question is,
Who's got the bubble gum? I think I'll stay out of it.
Pass.
Three bubble gum.
Uh-huh. The Aussies have got all the bubble gum. Well, I could get them out with me birds of Britain. But then they could rough my beautiful butterflies with great steam trains of history. No, I think it's best to go for what you're strong on, American Express and Diners Club. 4 credit cards.
Well, I feel like a real ponce now. If I'd known he was going to bit bubblegum, I wouldn't have eaten mine. Well, I'll be a dead dingo's donga. I'll have to hope he's strong on calling cards. 5 Greyhound taxi cabs, 24-hour service, 123-8007.
And that's how the bidding stayed. North trumped in on the first round of Speed Aces of History, ran straight down the Kings and Queens of England through the back of Cornflakes packets, and made one over trick with 3p off your next packet of Persil. The Australians went down to the pub. So, that's all from Bridge, but join us next week, back again in Adelaide, for the start of the Championship of Australian Four-Letter Scrabble.
Saturday Serials proudly present the more, further, reasonably exciting adventures of Captain Invisible and his trusty sidekick, the See-Through Kid. This week's episode, The Day the Earth Got Acne. We join Captain Invisible in the barber's shop.
Gee, Captain Invisible, this sure is some great honor, me cutting your hair.
There's nothing special about me, Tom. I'm just a guy like you.
He's only the head of the League of Stupid Heroes, that's all.
Oh, any stupid hero could do that, Tom.
Well, that's about it. What do you think of your haircut?
To tell you the truth, Tom, it doesn't look any different.
Which chair are you sitting in?
The middle one.
But I've been cutting the one at the end.
But you haven't cut anybody's hair.
Oh, yes,
but
he has, Captain. He cut mine.
See-through kid.
But I thought you didn't want your hair cut.
I didn't. I was sitting here reading a magazine. I'm nearly bored and my head is bleeding. I would have said something, but it's against the invisible oath to lose our temper with morons like Tom.
Oh, I'm so embarrassed. I'm going to turn on the radio.
Here's the news bulletin. Right this minute, masked raiders are robbing the city bank. That's the one right next to Tom's barbershop. If Captain Invisible is listening to this message, what a piece of luck.
Quick, see through. Let's go.
Okay, Captain Invisible.
Seconds later, the invisible car is racing down the main highway in pursuit of the masked raiders.
Okay, see through. Throw the car into top gear and we'll overtake them.
Okay, now what?
Now we drive the invisible car across the road and make them stop.
Great idea, Cap.
Here they come. There they go.
Wait, Cap. They threw something in the car. It looks like...
Cababonite.
The only substance that can hurt us.
Pure, undiluted poison distilled from the substance that makes doner kebabs smell the way they do.
Gasp! I can hardly breathe.
Choke. I'm growing weak.
Captain Invisible? Is that you?
Tom, you've got to help us.
Get rid of this kebabonite.
Not until See-Through pays for his haircut.
Here's the money, Tom.
Where?
Here.
Here?
No, here.
And so another anticlimactic adventure drags to its tedious conclusion as we rejoin the terrific twosome in the city hospital.
I can't understand it, kid. I'm fully recovered, yet you're still poorly.
I'm in agony, Cap, especially in my secret region.
It doesn't make sense, See-Through. I feel no pain in that region at all. And yet, while I've been here, I've had a vasectomy. Hello?
Hello, my name is Fred Gorman. You may have seen me on Channel 4 advertising my chain of TV shops, I. Advertise my own company because no one is as stilted and stupid sounding as me. Just look at some of the radio shows you can hear on my radios. Son of Cliche, only £3.99 with Chris, Barry, Nick, Maloney and Nick. Wilton slash to £1.99 the lot. You can get writers Rob Grant and Doug Naylor absolutely free if you buy the music by Peter Brewis for an unbelievable 50 pence. And where else could you get such a cheap producer as Alan Nixon, marked down to an incredible 99 pence. And here's the Gorman promise. If you can buy a cheaper radio show, I'll guarantee you a refund of your money back. Remember, the name. Frank Gorman. No. Fred. Fred Gorman.
Well, that's it for another week. There's a slight delay now before the continuity link because the transmitter at Biggin Hill has developed a slight problem. Hurry up. So we hope to get you back to the continuity announcer just as soon as we can. What's going on?
They're on level 4. There's 2 men left.
Right. Have you left some money on for us?
Yeah. Right.
So as soon as we've sorted out that problem at Biggin Hill, we'll be able to go back to the continuity announcer.
But they've lost a man. Tell them to hurry up. They're supposed to be on the air doing the link. They're on for the new record. They're on for it. Keep padding it out.
Ah, yes, and news just coming in from Biggin Hill. Apparently they've located the problem, and it shouldn't be too long now.
That's it. 84,000. 84,000, Jack. They're just putting the name up.
And the engineer's just informing me, in fact, that they've solved that transmitter problem. So we'll be handing you over to the continuity announcer any second.